Thank you, Steve. Maybe just to make one clarification about my background, PERC, the Property and Environment Research Center, is where I spent about almost 25 years as a senior fellow, and that was founded by John Bodden, who is here, and also by Richard Stroop, who's my husband. So my professional name, by the way, is Jane Shaw, but I've been at the a member of the Philadelphia Society for a very long time, and when I joined as Jane Shaw Stroop, and that's as I'm described today. There are many assaults on truth-seeking in the academy, and day after day, as Steve generously pointed out, our website, the popecenter.org, exposes them. And they are extensive, but I'm going to talk about just one today, and that is the assault on science, specifically through global warming, which, of course, now is commonly known as climate change because it covers more contingencies. I think you all may realize that global warming, the fear that higher temperatures caused by essentially industrial growth will rise out of control, will cause many apocalyptic kinds of impacts, from more hurricanes to melting ice sheets and so forth. That concept, apocalyptic global warming, is really the intellectual craze of our time. To a certain extent, it is an academic fad. Now, it's not limited to academia by any means, but it is not merely a fad either. Obviously, there's a great deal of scientific underpinnings to concern about global warming, but it has kind of taken over. It got its start in the federally funded laboratories of major universities, and it came into prominence beginning in 1988, when some of you may remember James Hansen, who was the head of and is the head of the Goddard Institute for Space Studies, announced to a congressional committee that he was 99% sure that global warming had arrived. That was back in 1988. And I believe it was a budget hearing, which is relevant to my comments here also. So how is science being assaulted? My chief source is for this short comment is Richard Lindzen, who is a climatologist at MIT. And I want to give you a little bit about his credentials, because in 1989, a year after James Hansen announced that global warming probably had arrived, he was interviewed featured in a story by Science magazine. Richard Kerr, a science reporter there, said one reason for Lindzen's prominence as a global warming skeptic, which he was in 1989, is his credentials. Educated at Harvard, Sloan Professor of Meteorology at MIT, and member of the National Academy of Sciences, no other U.S. skeptic has such scientific stature. Back then, Lindzen couldn't be ignored. He was too prominent in the field of climatology. Over time, however, the science establishment has managed to pay less and less attention to him. And recently, in an article that you can find on the EcoWorld website, Richard Lindzen describes the corruption that has been going on, including the way that, in some respects, he has been treated. For example, he was not allowed to respond to a critical article in a very prominent journal in a timely manner, as is the normal approach. He had to wait months and months before his description of a cooling effect of clouds was allowed to be defended. One journal published by a leading science society said that no, they would not publish his paper unless he wrote it with an author who took a different position, a co-author who took a different position than he did. I don't know how many people of you, how many people here are experts in this topic. I know some, like Joe Bast, are more expert than I. But you may not realize that since 1998, there's been no trend in world temperatures, neither up nor down, in spite of population growth, greater resource use, greater industrial production, including production of carbon dioxide. Now, it's true that 1998 was the world's warmest year since records have been taken. Now, those records, those formal records, go back to the late 19th century. But we are still in a warm period. But world temperatures are no higher today than when today's college seniors entered middle school. There has been no trend. So what's the corruption that's going on? In a nutshell, it's a tendency to select data that supports the idea that there is or will be excessive, dangerous global warming, and avoiding data or rejecting data that indicates otherwise. And we know that many of the predictions of higher temperatures, which are going to lead to political action, and may, even this year, may lead to a cap and trade program that would be very severe. Those projections are based on complex computer models that are based on all kinds of inputs about the nature of climate and the nature of the globe, and projections are made as a result. There is a tendency, there is necessarily a tweaking of the information to make these computer models come out right, but the tweaking is always in one direction. And similarly, Linson says, there is an effort to change, to tweak, or to select empirical data, which again is often very complex, especially when it's about temperatures that go over maybe thousands of years. It's always in the same direction, towards conformity, not towards scientific truth. And there's one famous example among the experts, and that is called the hockey stick. If you imagine a graph in which you're describing temperatures that started several thousand years ago, and let's see, we'll put them over here, and then you come to the modern era, and all along this period, there's just a little bit of variation. And then suddenly, around 1988 or so, you start seeing a very sharp upswing, and that's the hockey stick. Well, that paper was kind of challenged what many of us learned in school. Didn't we learn about the medieval warm period, the medieval optimum? How did the Vikings get to Greenland, for example? It was only because it was warm enough to settle there. Why was England able to make wine, grow grapes and make wine during that period? Because it was warmer, the temperatures were warmer. But all of that, using some highly selective tree ring data, Michael Mann and his associates came up with a flattening of that warm period. Therefore, that suggests that we are in a highly unusual period that is dangerous and something must be done. In other words, it's contributing to the apocalyptic global warming. That paper, though, has been challenged, questioned, and discredited, but it is still part of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's latest report. There are many other examples of corruption of data, and not just announced by or reported by Richard Lins and Pat Michaels, some of you know, was the state climatologist in Virginia, and he was also a professor at the University of Virginia. He was told by the governor that he had to stop calling himself the state climatologist if he talked about global warming because he didn't have the right line. So he has resigned from the University of Virginia, which did not back him up, backed up the governor instead. And he has a number of other examples of similar climatologists. Okay, now I'd like to shift gears. I consider global warming a serious threat to the quality of research in academia. And this is not unprecedented. And I'd like to tell you about another example. Many of you know Michael Crichton, the novelist, Jurassic Park. One of his recent novels, he died last year of cancer. One of his more recent novels was State of Fear, in which, of all amazing things, the environmentalists were the villains because they were trying to engineer a giant tsunami that would be extremely harmful, but would supposedly tell people that finally global warming had arrived, because supposedly that would be the cause of the tsunami, which of course it wasn't. Anyway, that's fiction, implausible, so forth. But at the end of State of Fear, Michael Crichton has a appendix in which he discusses another academic fad, intellectual craze, eugenics. Eugenics in the early 20th century was extremely popular among elite circles. Eugenics was a theory, a research program about how to improve the gene pool, but it became a political program that ended up really with atrocities in Nazi Germany. But within the United States, 29 states allowed involuntary sterilization as a result of this emphasis on eugenics and this confidence that, as H.G. Wells, Margaret Sanger, many others promoted the idea that prevention of procreation by inferior people, vaguely defined as degenerates and weaklings, was a legitimate activity of the state. It was an intellectual program that became a political program. It was espoused by Theodore Roosevelt, Woodrow Wilson, Oliver Wendell Holmes, Louis Brandeis. It was funded extensively by the Carnegie Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, many of the best, most prominent schools, Yale, Stanford, Harvard, Johns Hopkins had programs in eugenics. We don't talk much about it now because of the ultimate implications that that resulted. So Crichton writes, "I'm not arguing that global warming is the same as eugenics, but the similarities are not superficial. And I do claim, regarding global warming, that open and frank discussion of the data and of the issues is being suppressed." So the similarities are academic elites, university support, substantial funding. 23% of NASA's funds for research go to environmental studies, and a very big portion of that is concerning global warming. In conclusion, I think I have maybe just a moment. There are other examples. Global warming is not the only corruption of science in today. For example, Zeke Paysauer, a North Carolina State University professor, wrote a very interesting article about all the constraints that agricultural economists are placed under because of political pressure. If it's very difficult for them to criticize restrictions on competition in the agricultural markets, for example. Also in North Carolina, some years ago, the head of a university center on transportation was replaced. Why? Because he didn't think that mass transit was a very good policy for the did not think that it was a very good policy for the country for the use of the diversion of funds that had originally been set up for highway funding. He was opposed to the overuse of mass transit, and therefore he was replaced, especially at a university that really wanted to get a light rail line to the university from its city, Charlotte. So I think there's, in sum, we have politicized science. I think that federal funding has a great deal to do with it. When you have elites, self-interest, taxpayer money all going together, the result isn't pretty when you don't have accountability.